Hi, how are you? My name's Simon Smart. I'm with Justine Toe. We're from the Centre for Public Christianity and you're listening to Life and Faith. Well, we tend to ignore the grim reality of death. I know I do. But Justine, you recently sorted out, in a sense, at the Sydney Film Festival earlier this year. You went to watch two documentaries about death, Dreams of a Life and Death of a Japanese Salesman. Let's have a listen to the trailer for Dreams of a Life before we talk about it.
I'm looking for any information, no matter how minor, about Joyce Vincent.
You know, reporters always get asked, oh yeah, what's the best story you've ever done, or the worst story? And this is in my clutch of ones that you will just remember through a lifetime.
Mrs. Besson, we have a repossession order!
We knew pretty quickly that it was out of the ordinary.
She wasn't alcoholic, she didn't smoke, she didn't take drugs.
Miss Vincent! Miss Vincent!
They said she died around December 2003.
That the only way she could be identified was by comparing dental records.
It was so horrendous. She was found in front of her television that was still on for so many years.
3 years and nobody's come looking for you.
You have this mystery that's suddenly thrown up and you just want to know more.
You know, if you had to meet Aretha Franklin, you know this woman's a star. You know, that's certain something. Joyce had that.
She has a very good voice.
People would gravitate towards her.
Very exotic, beautiful, and everybody fancied her.
Everything about her was immaculate. She just reminded me of somebody that I would like to be.
People said she looked like Whitney Houston. I thought she was more attractive than that.
Somebody must have said, hey, we haven't heard from her for 2 months, 6 months, a year.
Watch me fall from grace.
You'd like to think that everyone's got someone.
Disappear with no trace.
I think about her a lot, really. Just holding her, actually. Holding her.
Just can't imagine her dying alone.
How did she get herself into that situation?
How come no one knew?
If you laid it out in a book form, you'd be thinking, this got to be fiction. But this is real life.
Okay, so Justine, we gather from the trailer, it's quite a tragic situation. This woman, Joyce Vincent, died in 2003, but she wasn't found in her flat for 3 years. And when she was found, the TV was still on. I mean, how is this even possible?
Yeah, it's a pretty horrible story, actually. And it seems even more unlikely because, you know, she had friends. She was a really bubbly, kind of outgoing sort of personality. And, you know, she's a beautiful, charismatic woman. At that stage, she was living in like a housing commission style situation. And, you know, you kind of think, oh, how's it possible that the TV's still on, the electricity's still working? But apparently she got lost in all the red tape around bureaucracy. Like her, you know, maybe it came up that, oh, this bill's unpaid, but it just got churned back into the system. So it's like a really horrible story of, you know, people in some ways being like a number or a file number that never...
never has a person attached to it.
Yeah, yeah, you're just a cog in the machine in a way. The film is a collection of interviews with friends of Joyce Vincent, her ex-boyfriends, her colleagues, as well as dramatised reenactments of Vincent's life. And the film speculates on, you know, what led to this lonely death and why did no one notice. It's a pretty horrible situation, really.
It really is. You hear of these things occasionally, but to have it sort of so focused on it, telling the story, is quite confronting, isn't it? What got you interested in seeing this film in the first place?
I was around December and I was looking to write a story on, you know, people spending Christmas alone, and just in my Google searching, it came up that this story was out of the UK and she was found with the TV still on, as you said, but also with these half-wrapped Christmas presents, like, you know, like littering the floor. So it's a sense of, well, she has people around her who she's obviously going to give these presents to, but for some reason, you know, she's completely disconnected from them and she won't be discovered for 3 years. So this was the way that I first got interested in this film. So I caught it at the film festival. And I think it really speaks into our cultural moment. You know, we live in, people talk about modern alienation and how people don't know their neighbours that well. And of course, the horror is heightened further by the fact that, you know, she was connected, she had jobs, she was really bubbly and good-looking, and how could she have been missed? Because she totally doesn't fit the profile of someone who wouldn't be discovered for 3 years.
No, she certainly doesn't. What about Death of a Japanese Salesman? What's that film about? We play the trailer, but it's all in Japanese, so tell us about it.
Yeah, so Tomoaki Sanada is the Japanese salesman of the title, and he gets diagnosed with abdominal cancer, and it means that he has only a couple of months to live. His daughter, Mammy, is a filmmaker, and so she, in some ways, has a video diary of him going about his last months. So in these last months, he's putting his affairs in order, kind of organising his funeral, finalising all his financial affairs, all that sort of thing. So, you know, as you can imagine, he has a lot of forward notice as to what's coming, so he is able to organise all his stuff and get it all sorted out, you know, down to the level of who he wants at the funeral. So he's a bit of a control freak, actually. Yeah, and what was really funny in a weird way was that in some ways he looked like my dad, actually. My dad passed away a couple of years ago of cancer, and I have to admit that when I was watching Sanada go about, you know, this business of organising his final affairs, that sense of practicality really reminded me of my dad, and I'm sure lots of other, you know, Chinese or Asian dads out there. And there's this real sense of, it's very frustrating to look at that and going, you know, you're facing the end of your life and you care about these sorts of details. But it's also quite endearing as well, because you know that why he's getting his affairs in order is so as to make the job for his family as easy as possible after he's gone.
Yeah, so you mentioned your dad. You think your own experience of death in you know, losing your dad makes you think about it more, and that's maybe why you sought out these films at the festival?
I think definitely, yeah. I remember reading Harry Potter a couple of years ago, and in the book we get introduced to this magical creature called a Thestral, right? And they're like these horse-like creatures, but they look like skeletons as well. The thing is, though, you can't actually see these Thestrals until you've experienced death in your life. So, and I think she's making a really important point here that once death happens to someone, it really colours your experience of the world, and it shapes the way that you go about, you know, what you do in the world. So for me, that includes going out and watching documentaries about death, because I'm fascinated by it, but also touched by it as
but
well.
It shapes everything about your life in, once you've had death come so close to you. Mm. Lots of people don't have that. Eventually we all do, but yeah. Some people seem to go through quite a part of their life without experiencing that. What do these films have to say about death? Is there a way of sort of summarising that?
The two films are really making points about how important relationships are. I mean, that's not their ultimate purpose, and I am reading them in relation to each other as well. But it's a real stark contrast between, you know, the way that Joyce's friends really miss her, but we get this idea that she's really aloof at the same time. She has a tendency to pop in and out of people's lives, and you can't really pin her down. There's one instance in the film where she is in hospital for some reason, and she lists her next of kin as her bank manager. And this fact really crushes her ex-boyfriend, Martin, who's like, you know, I wish that she'd called me. And no doubt this sort of tendency to kind of drift in and out of people's lives, in some ways you can see that this is probably why she wasn't discovered for so long.
Okay, well, the film is Dreams of a Life. Let's have a listen to a clip from that.
It's like she never really existed. She was just a figment of our imagination. She was a story. It was like someone that we all just made up, almost, partly because of the fact that we just let someone disappear off and die that we all knew, that we all thought we cared about.
The debate about being living in dislocated societies, not having communities anymore, has been banging on for ages, and it's just been a sort of theory. And this is like the living reality of it.
I often thought about what she was doing, and probably for most of the time I actually thought that she was already dead.
We all have to think about how we live our lives a bit more and stop this crazy existence where we don't have time for friends or family, we only have time to go shopping.
This does seem to make a really powerful comment about the nature of our society now and our communities, lack of them.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that first guy puts it really plainly. You know, in some ways it's easier to think that he and his friends made Joyce up because this is a better alternative than what actually happened. You know, she wasn't missed. And so you compare that understanding of relationships and how important they are, but also what happens when they're lacking, with, you know, Death of a Salesman, where Sanada is constantly surrounded by family. You know, I remember the scenes around his deathbed. He's got his wife, his children, his grandchildren. He's had grandchildren fly in from America to see him. And there's this really moving scene where he actually tells his wife that, he loves her, which, you know, to us in the West is like, oh, this is normal, right? But for a taciturn kind of really, you know, businessman style Chinese guy, this is quite a big deal in some ways. It's a real it's a very vulnerable scene. We learn that in the later stages of their marriage, they sort of drifted apart from each other and they actually lived in separate houses, but they kind of got to know each other again in some ways, and in some ways they fell back in love. And so him telling her that is a really powerful moment. And there's this real sense that in the death of a Japanese salesman, there's this real sense of needing to make good with other people before you die. And I remember just reflecting again on when my dad died, when he was in the hospice, a nurse came and said to us that she found in her experience that people who are able to make their peace with other people tend to die well, or they die in a better way than if you don't make peace.
Now, do these films, both of these films, go into any kind of spiritual territory as it relates to death? Are there spiritual questions that come up in the films?
Not exactly in Dreams of a Life, but they do in Death of a Japanese Salesman. There's this whole theme of the film that Sonata wants to get baptized, but this is no, like, you know, last minute conversion so he can be assured of where he's going afterwards. This again is the practical side of Sonata. He wants to be baptized because the church charges a really competitive rate when it comes to funeral services.
Hang on, so he wants to get baptized so that his funeral will be cheaper.
This sort of attitude is not uncommon among my people, if I can put it that way.
Ask the priest what he thought about that. But anyway.
Now, that's quite a funny moment, but the film does get quite serious, and especially when Sonata's young granddaughter says to him, and she's just this innocent little kid, and she's like, is it fun where you're going? You know, it's like really moving. And he says in relation to that, I can't tell you, right? Because obviously he doesn't know. And at the end of the film, Mammy, who's the daughter of the filmmaker daughter, she asks her father in voiceover, so where are you now? She speaks for Sonata again by repeating his earlier words, that I can't tell you. So this is how the film sort of deals with sort of spiritual questions. It kind of gestures towards them but doesn't really dig deep into them. But there is suggestion that, you know, we hope for something better after death, and that Sonata's family feels the same way. There's a scene where the family is gathering around Sonata and they're talking and laughing, even though, you know, he's only just clinging on to life. And Mammy says in voiceover, you know, being here together laughing, it feels like this must be heaven.
Yeah, well, judging from that line, Justine, people still have this desire for heaven or some kind of experience where we can still relate to those who we love, and life goes on in that sense. And it's just that when you talk to people these days, so many people don't believe that anymore.
Yeah, people really deflect any questions of heaven. I've found that, especially speaking to people who don't share my beliefs after my dad died. Stephen Hawking, we all know him as incredibly gifted
scientist.
Yeah, he once commented that heaven is a fairy story for those who are afraid of the dark.
I remember when he said that.
It's a big line. And I saw the context in which he said this comment, and he was talking about how, you know, the brain is a computer ultimately, and when it breaks down, there is no afterlife for broken computers. And look, I'm not a scientist. I can't challenge him on that. But I will just observe that the scene when Sonata actually dies, which takes place entirely off screen, is really powerful. And the kind of grief that it inspires in the family, you know, all I can say is no computer could ever grieve or love or feel loss like that.
But it is true that we don't know what to make of death and what happens after we die. It's easier to leave the matter hanging, like Sonata saying that he can't tell us where he's going because we just don't know.
But at the same time, we do know what we want. You know, we want, you know, in relation to Joyce, we wish that she didn't die like that. And at the very most, we wish that she's still alive. And this really comes home to us in the last shot of Dreams of a Life, where the filmmaker, Carol Morley, finds this rare glimpse of footage of Joyce. She was at a Nelson Mandela concert and her image was found on the screen. And she writes, Carol Morley, the filmmaker, she writes of this experience, it was Joyce moving and alive. I had found her. The power of the moving image hit me, the power to resurrect.
To resurrect, that's an interesting word there.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a really powerful moment, but it's a very sad one because, you know, Joyce can't really be resurrected through the film. We may wish that she wasn't dead, and, you know, but all the footage in the world of her, it's not going to be enough to bring her back. And that's the same with Sonata.
Yeah, I remember C.S. Lewis, the Christian writer, he's famous for saying that our desires are clues towards the existence of God. So could our, he's sort of suggesting, could our wish for people not to die or for them to be reconciled with family and friends and so on actually be a clue to the reality of the existence of heaven?
Now, these films, Death of a Salesman and Dreams of a Life, they don't deal with these kinds of questions specifically, but in focusing on death, these issues come up. You know, they're really hard to avoid.
Yeah, so even in a culture that doesn't like dealing with death, maybe these films are part of a larger conversation that we all ought to be having.